Welcome, everybody, to the Competition Archery Media Podcast, where we explore all things pertaining to competition archery. I'm your host, PJ Riley. Our Competition Archery Media Podcast is brought to you by our fine platinum sponsors, PSE Archery, Trueball Excel, Black Eagle, Matthews, Hoyt, and Elite. And today we got a special guest fresh off of a perfect round this weekend, PSE Pro Dave Cousins. Dave, thanks for being here.
Well, thanks for the invitation. It's always good to speak to you guys.
So we're shooting Indoor World Series this weekend. This is an online virtual tournament, and you laid down a perfect 600.
Yeah, I had a pretty good round.
I have a million questions about this, but let's set the stage first. So this was an online tournament, so people were shooting in different venues all over the world. Where were you shooting your round?
I was shooting here in my own shop, my own range.
Oh, okay.
That's the flexibility about what World Archery has done. I know NFA has gone a slightly different direction with getting people into the clubs and shops,
right,
that have gone on and signed up to be a hub, if you will, to use a term for this type of thing. World Archery's done it a little different. They're like, hey, I mean, some people are shooting outside. Yeah, wherever you can throw it together, get it together, get it done, whatever the regulations or recommendations might be as to where you live, how many people can gather and such. So, and I've built a great facility right here, and I've got, you know, everything I need. So there's no reason to ever go anywhere else. So.
Nice. So this is a 60-hour round. This is under World Archery rules. So you're shooting the skinny, the baby 10 in the middle there, 11 in a Lancaster Classic on target. And you have to shoot 23 diameter arrows. So 60 tens. I mean, that just... Have you done that before on your own, just shooting around?
Oh, God, yeah.
Okay.
Now that might sound a little arrogant, but I'll be honest with you. I mean, in your own shop, in your own range, there isn't an elite level pro out there that hasn't ran 60 of these things or done it a bunch of times.
Right, right.
You know, I mean, it's the perfect storm. The hardest part is, you know, when you're doing it and you got your friends just sitting there hanging out, just watching you shoot.
Well,
because they want to talk about fishing or they want to drink a beer, you know, like that's literally the hardest part.
I get that. I mean, you were on home court advantage there in your shop, which, you know, a lot of people do really well in those situations. But at the same time, you had to be thinking as you're getting close, I mean, this counts and I'm still clean.
Yeah, I mean, you're writing them down and you're scoring them on the app, you know, and it's real. It's as real as it can get, you know, but honestly, indoors, like when I my alliance with PSE, my focus was to be on indoors. Just because pre-pandemic, it really was the perfect storm for the largest number of people participating in all archery games worldwide combined. Indoors is king, no doubt. Because there's nowhere on the globe you can go that indoor archery isn't a thing. There's not a medium to large size city in the world where there is not an indoor archery club. It takes just a little bit of time to get proficient at it, and then you spend the rest of your lifetime trying to be perfect at it. You know, really, indoor archery really touches more people worldwide than any kind of archery.
Right.
Obviously, except for bow hunting, and we'll leave that off the table. It's a totally different deal. But it's something everybody can do almost anywhere. So that was my focus. So living up here where I do in the Northeast, we got plenty of time to shoot indoors.
That's right. You're snowed in for what, like 8 months out of the year?
No.
Not that many.
We get it a little bit worse than you do in Pennsylvania. Like my last storm just came through and I got a foot and a half. I got 18 inches of snow. You know, so, but yeah, you know, I got a nice place here and I, you know, pretty much when I am shooting and it's competition season, you know, we're still trying to stay sharp now, but we're not shooting as much as we would if it was real tournament season now without the cancellations. I'd probably be shooting 200, 250, maybe 300 arrows a day indoors.
Every day.
Mm. Yeah.
So you did not do that much shooting leading up to this event?
No, not nearly as much as I would be doing. Because first of all, like the entire month of November, I normally would have spent in Europe with two different tournaments, a couple of seminars, some appearances, doing some work with some sponsors, some alliances I have over there. So I would have been on the stick or on the grind since like 1st of October. Usually it's like, yeah, it's like when end of September comes, it's put the boat and the fishing toys away. It's time to get, you got a month to get ready for work.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and we'd be shooting right through because I mean, you know, January we'd have Nimes, we'd have the Classic, we'd have Iowa, things would be super busy right now and you'd be full tilt into it. So
do you think any of that difference helped this weekend, or for you, was it just, you know, it was just a good day?
It's just another day behind the bow, to be honest with you. I mean, like I said, I know it sounds arrogant, but it's, you know, this thing, this whole virtual thing is a little bit different. I mean, you still got, you know, the internal complications that can help you create or destroy a great competitive moment. But you do still, you lack a lot of the external things that can alter your internal way about doing things. And that's what competition is. How well can you deal with those external elements, the things you can't control? You know, and every competitor knows that. And like I said, there's not a pro out there that hasn't run 30X after 30X after 30X indoors. I don't know.
Well,
I just shoot them, PJ.
Well, no. The reason I ask is like, because when I texted you about talking today, Kyle Douglas was running a hot streak. And I think.
Yeah, he was on a heater.
Yeah. And I think you had said he had 12 arrows left and you fully expected him to put up another 600. But in the 8th or 28th end, his last arrow, he shot a 9.
Yeah. Things happen, you know.
Yeah. And Mike Schlosser, he shot a 9 as well. He had another 599.
Which are awesome, epic scores. You know, I'll honestly say anything a 597 or above is awesome shooting. It really, truly is. Because if you look at it, that's in a head-to-head scenario, that's shooting 149, 149, 149, 150.
Yeah.
I mean, that's great shooting. That's going to Vegas and shooting a 28X and a 29X.
That's not
too bad. Phenomenal shooting. No, it ain't. Absolutely not. Absolutely not.
So now to put this in perspective, so the Indoor World Series, I forget how many events that is this year, but they had one in November. There's this one. What's the rest of it? Like, this is part of a series.
Yeah, I'm not even sure. I think it's 4 they've put together.
Okay.
I didn't look into it too much. I saw I'd missed the opportunity. I missed the first one. I'm like, all right, well, I mean, I got to do something. I might as well. I mean, I'm practicing anyway in the hopes that we're going to have some tournaments. And honestly, I just like to shoot, you know, still, because it's just that being in that moment to have a chance to outdo yourself, you know, to ride that razor's edge and win, you know. So I was still practicing and shooting. So I was like, oh, I'll sign up for this one. So I signed up for this one. I'll keep the ball rolling, sign up for the next one, shoot it sometime in January. But I think it's 4 events, but I'm not for certain.
I think you're right, if I recall from before. So now, well, before I get into the extraneous, let's talk about the round here. I want to know all the particulars. So which PSE are you shooting? Were you shooting for this?
That has been the number one question.
Ah.
I'm still at this point shooting my Super Focus XL LD. For primary, for indoors, and that's the same blue bow that I shot last season. I shot that bow in at the first leg of the Indoor World Cup we had, which was in Macau in China. And then I shot that in Nimes. I shot at Kings of Archery. I shot it in Italy, in Roma, at the Indoor World Cup. I won. I shot it the whole season, you know, and I even shot it at the Classic too. And that's the bow that I'd shot. In Rome, I qualified with a 598. Nimes, I qualified with a 598. Lancaster, I qualified with a 659, which would be a 599. You know, I mean, I shot, that bow's just been good to me. It doesn't care what arrow I throw on it. It just pushes them straight, and it likes to hit the middle. So I'd be silly to put that down. And to be honest with you, I don't have a production run citation currently in my hands. I'm still working with a prototype that I got some time back that I actually set up briefly for an outdoor event. I took it to Gator Cup.
Okay.
Back in November, where I shot really good there. We had some pretty rough conditions, but the bow performed awesome in those windy conditions for me. But I've kind of held off on really getting into it for indoors because I didn't have a production one. The one I have is definitely not finished yet the way I would like, and I didn't have another one to compare and contrast it to. So it was like, well, if this one is definitely different than a production one, I really don't want to get too involved in this one.
Right. You'd get million questions. How come yours looks like this? Why has it got that?
Well, and it's not even stuff the average person would see. You'd literally have to take the thing apart to see the differences.
Right? Gotcha.
Yeah, but it's just little things. It's like, you know, hey, it was a work in progress, the one I got. And I see it is kind of tough. You see on the socials, you know, people are getting them, you know, dealers are getting them overseas, a few shooters are getting them and stuff. It's like, you know, at the end of the day, I need 10s on the end of my arrows.
Right.
It doesn't matter what bow shoots them to get them there. You know, Super Focus is a great ride for me. Citation will be an equally good bow with some different attributes once I can get a production one on my hands. So, but delivery and demand is really tough on them. So I'll shoot the Super Focus. She's all right.
Now, apparently so.
Yeah. Well, Kyle's been shooting his Super Focus. You know,
yes.
So I don't know what he shot this weekend, but. It's been a good ride, the Super Focus.
You said you were shooting the LD version. What is your draw length?
My draw length is roughly 31 and a quarter. And sometimes it's up and down between 31 and an eighth, 31 and a quarter. So it just depends on what game I'm playing. If it's outdoors, it'd be like 31 and an eighth. Indoors, I'll stretch out a little bit. 31
a little bit
and a
longer,
quarter.
Yeah. Bars.
Shooting a Conquest Smackdown bars.
Okay.
The 625s.
How much weight?
I'm shooting a 34-inch front bar and a 15-inch back bar, each one of them with 20 ounces on them.
Oh, the same. Okay.
And all of my stuff is all mounted off the front stabilizer bushing. I don't utilize the back bushings. I don't utilize the low bushings. I have particular reasons why. Number one, it just doesn't fit my style. Number two, when you strap a bar in 20 ounces or so to the back and bottom of one of those handles, any handle, you drastically change the way that riser was designed to flex. So you can cause yourself some undue tuning issues. If you have the top and the bottom of the riser, if they're designed to flex a specific way, to keep each limb and each cam in the same plane, both vertically and horizontally, if you change that, you totally change your knock travel. So now you think you have a tuning problem that's the cam or the bow or something like that, when it's really not. It's something you've done by drastically changing the flex of the platform.
How about, and keeping everything off the front bushing doesn't hamper that or doesn't lead to that?
Okay. Not as much. I mean, Earl Hoyt got it right all those years ago.
Yeah. How about
that? Now, 95% of the people listening don't know who Earl Hoyt was.
They know the last name.
May he rest in peace. But, you know, he invented the stabilizer bushing and the stabilizer. So
right.
When he put it up there in front of the grip close to the pivot point of the bow, he got it right the first time.
How about that? Now, you said it doesn't fit your style. What's your style that...
Well, I mean, I like a more of a resistance stabilization system. With that said, I want the bow to be dominantly resistant on one plane or multiple planes so that at full draw, under load, you know, when you're pushing on the fat part, pulling on the skinny part, trying to get the thing to go bang, that it is balanced under that force. And that's kind of why I have the weight the way I do. And plus, my riser is a deflexed riser. On a reflexed riser, I may alter my weight distribution slightly, but I'm still going to shoot what I would define as a resistance stabilizer system. Now, if I was to go with what I would call a balance stabilization system, I would probably run considerably less weight on my front bar maybe more weight on my back bar. It would be the kind of setup where if you came back and you hit the draw stops, maintained your draw length, you didn't put any extra force into the front half or back half, you came down into the target, you put your sight in the middle, it would be balanced, perfectly steady, completely still, until you started to apply strength or force to work to get the shot to execute. Then it's going to oscillate because now it's become unbalanced. And what typically happens with that is inside your little brain, you see this movement and you're like, well, I wouldn't probably get what I'm going for here, so I'm going to slow down. I'm going to pump the brakes a little bit on my engagement, whether it's you push, pull, twist, squeeze, whatever it is you do to get the arrow to go from point A to point B.
Yeah.
You see that sight kind of slow down again. You're like, okay, I feel better about this now. I'm going to continue. And you start and you stop and you start and you stop. And this whole process happens really, really fast. And I can probably tell, as you're hearing this, you're probably nodding to yourself. Yep.
I am.
I've done that. I've seen that.
You better believe it.
Yeah. That's an indication of a stabilization system that's a balanced system. And if you're a very passive, relaxed shooter, you might be able to get away with that, where you draw back, you put the sight in the middle of the target, and you basically sit there and wait for the bow to pull the arrow out of your release aid. That doesn't fit my style. I am strength, power, engagement, timing, rhythm, and that doesn't play with a balanced system.
Gotcha.
There's always going to be movement.
And that 20-20 setup, so that's going to feel more like the front is heavier than the back.
Correct.
Yeah.
At static.
At static, now, right, yes.
Yeah, at full draw under load, while you're trying to get the thing to fire, it's going to be drastically different.
How about that? So what, well, let's finish your bow setup here. What rest and arrows are you shooting?
I'm just shooting a blade rest, shooting a Hamsky with the full World Archery length overdraw, 6 centimeters.
Gotcha. Do you have a Cousins blade on there, I hope?
I do. I have the Dave Cousins Best Launcher on there. Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
And sight?
I'm shooting the Shibuya, the CPX-2.
Okay.
Wow. And I'm using the new Shibuya Oculus scope with roughly a 6 to a 7 power lens, depending on how far it is away from your eye. With my draw length and sight setup, I think my sight radius from my eye to my lens is close to 37 inches, 38 inches, something like that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And are you aiming off a, you can't have electronics, so it is. Is it a dot or is it a pin?
Oh, it's a dot. Yeah,
it's a dot.
With my lens magnification, now somebody asked me this yesterday and I had to actually go down and look. With my lens magnification, I know my dot is roughly the size of the Vegas 10 ring. Or the recurve 10. My overall scope field of view, I think, with my Oculus and the lens I have in there and my sight radius, I think I could probably, it's roughly the entire spot of a 3-spot. So from like the 6 ring in fits in my scope.
Gotcha. You're not seeing much out of that.
No.
All right. So now
always a little bit fuzzy too. I don't like it crystal clear.
Oh, really? Okay.
I want a little fuzz. I have no lens in my peep. I shoot a 1/16 open hole. I shoot a peep sight that cost about $5. It's a Fletcher True Peep. If it ain't broke, don't fix it.
It sounds like it works. So, all right. So tell me about your sight picture. This is what always interests me. I mean, you explained what you see, but what is your dot doing? Do you put it right in the middle? Are you seeing a little bit of movement, or what are you seeing when you execute your shot?
Here's another thing that I'll give you guys. I believe in what I call shot vocabulary. You need to have a handful of different ways that you go about getting your sight to be in and around the area you need it to be in, and to get it to be there while you're during your window of opportunity to shoot a good, strong shot. Well, you're not on the decline of time and you're not on the decline of strength. Typically on the days that I prefer, I'll draw back, load up the back half, engage the front half, anchor in, nose on the string, center up my peep and scope. I migrate down to the target. I'll slow down and stall a little bit around 12, 1 o'clock, red, yellowish. And then from there, I just kind of turned my mind off, because during that stall is about the time that I'll bring my hand around the trigger, wrap my thumb around the trigger on the cartridge just because. And then from there, I'm just looking at maintaining a uniform amount of yellow around my black dot all the time as I'm building strength. Boop, and hopefully the shot goes off. Now, some days I've got to change it up a little bit, because my window of opportunity isn't right, or, you know, my amount of movement, not so much the amount of movement is important, but the tempo, the speed of the movement.
Gotcha.
Because you're looking to have a sight picture that moves at a speed that is comfortable to keep engaging the shot, and also moves within an area that's acceptable to that. Because you can have a real nice, slow, drifty sight picture that doesn't get upset when you apply force, but if the range of motion's too big, it's going to be really difficult for you to want to keep going.
Uh-huh.
You know? And also, if you have a good range of motion that, say, it never leaves the 10 or the gold, but it's moving at a speed that's a little too jittery or rapid, that's also going to be somewhat subconsciously upsetting. You know, you're like, geez, I don't want to go anywhere near this thing. It's like, it's shaking like mad, but it's holding good. If this breaks away and resumes a larger movement, I could be way out there. So it's about finding an approach that gets you a range of motion at a speed you're comfortable continuing working the execution at. And it changes. It changes, yeah. You know, so sometimes I've got to come in and I've got to settle in the middle and then place my thumb on the trigger and begin to work towards execution. You know, some days if I come in there and I don't begin my engagement of the release aid and the bow early enough, the bow will drop out and there it sits.
Yeah, yeah.
6 o'clock, 6 o'clock, 5 o'clock, half in, half out. And it's like all the force in the world won't move it up.
Right.
It's like, I am holding so good. There's my dot. There's the 10. Yeah. I can see them both. This does me no good at all. And I'll tell you this, and I've talked about this in other podcasts and interviews, and even in my seminars and when I coach people, I might be the only person in our sport that will tell you this. If your sight has to sit somewhere other than the middle and it does not interfere with your shot execution and your timing and rhythm, move the sight. Move it. We're the only shooting sport that people preach you need to hold on what you want to hit. IPSC, IPDA, pistol, rifle, shotgun, trap, skeet, sporting clays. None of these people aim at the target. None of them.
So you're saying that you're okay with putting that pin underneath?
Absolutely.
Uh-huh. So I
always move the sight, because now I can keep everything in a clean plane of view that doesn't interfere with my execution.
Right, right. I know Robert Householder, one known pro shooter of the year, ASA, and he was the first person I heard mention about for indoor. He shoots at Lollipop. He puts it at the bottom. That's just what works for him.
Yeah.
That's cool. Good.
Yeah, your first day of practical pistol training, that's what your instructor's going to tell you. He's like, front sight, rear sight, target, stack them all up.
How about that?
Exactly.
So arrows. Did we mention arrows?
We haven't talked about arrows.
Oh, arrows. No. Okay. What were you shooting?
I'm shooting trusty old 23-15s. Shooting 160 grain points in these. As the bows have gotten faster over the years, I used to shoot that recipe with a 200 grain point. 29-inch shaft, and it was really good. And since going back to aluminums last year from like a 7-year hiatus shooting other shafts, I thought, you know, it was good with that old trusty recipe, 23-15s, 29 inches, 200 grain points. They were just too weak, just a little loose. You know, they wouldn't really one hole. They would shoot a lot of half shaft inner tens. So I started dialing the weight back after talking to a good friend of mine, Rod Menzer, makes Competition Archery Products points.
Yeah.
And he's like, try something a little lighter. And I'm like, no, man, I don't want to try lighter. I don't believe in this whole stiff crap. I was like, all right, well, send me some 160s. I put them in, and my problems went away. So that's what I'm running in that. Vanes, I'm running my Signature Series Gas Pro 280 indoor vanes. It's a 2.8-inch vane with a little slightly higher profile and fairly stiff material, so there's not a lot of oscillation, and the arrow's not fighting itself to stabilize. So,
three fletch or four?
Three. Okay. Yeah. I did monkey around with a four fletch a little bit a few years ago on some other arrows I was shooting. And it was, at that time, I think the bow I was using and the arrows, that was the keystone to that rig. I put four vanes on and life was normal again. I don't know what it was with three. It just, that bow and those particular arrows just would not run it.
Yeah.
Wouldn't run it. And plus I had to shoot a drop away too to make it all work. But I'm just happy to be back to three vanes, be back to a launcher, be back to a bow and back to an arrow that for me is just like baseline. Normal, this works.
Yeah.
No monkeying around under the hood to make it work.
But it sounds like one of the keys to success in this is to try those things, to experiment, to play with this.
Yeah. No, you got
four
to.
Fletch,
you got
three to. Fletch, whatever, different weights. Yeah.
Right.
So but, many, you know, we get into a rut so many times, just
a little bit, but I also know, I mean, after 25 years of doing this for a living and nearly 40 years of shooting a bow, I know what works. And if I take a basic baseline setup with a bow, you know, even tiller, even timing, level the knock point out just slightly above the bottom of the burger button hole, eighth of an inch, quarter of an inch, you know, run a certain kind of stabilizer setup, eyeball the center shot down the middle with a good baseline arrow build. If it won't shoot that, I don't really know how much I want to mess with it. It's like I've spent 2.5 decades doing this for a living. I've seen all the setups and I've worked them all. And I, you know, if it doesn't run the ABCs, the basics, like, do I really want to dig into this just to try to get it close to what I know is good? No.
Too many variables there.
Yeah. You get a lot of stuff. It's like, now you gotta run this fletch, you gotta run that fletch, you gotta do this, you gotta do that, you gotta do this, and all for what? Just to get back to what your abilities were with a really basic setup?
Yeah.
No.
So Saturday was the day you shot your round, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah, no. Saturday. Okay. So we talked about a little, you said you were just shooting your bow, but and did there come any point during that round where you were thinking, hey man, 600 is out there, is in reach?
No.
Or honestly, did you not think about that?
No, it's the same as any other competition. I mean, my focus is always on the process, not the result. You know, there's a little bit of thinking about the goal, but it's always about the process, because I know I've learned over the years that if you're focused on the process and you execute the commission of that process to the best of your abilities, the odds are tremendously in your favor rather than thinking about the outcome. I've seen it time and time again, and that's something that honestly comes with age, comes with competitive maturity.
Well, I was going to say, that sounds good, and I understand the principles about it, but man, I got to think, of course, I don't shoot 600s, but I got to think on like N25, I'm like, holy crap, here comes 600. You just push that out.
No, I mean, you just keep going because, you know, it's the freedom to try something different. And competitive fishing has taught me that. The freedom to try something different without fear of consequences. You know, because if you're, you know, yeah, sure. If you're not used to it and you got a big score rolling, you're like, man, I got a big score rolling. I just want to get some tens and get this over with. Now you've completely switched your focus. Like, what got you there? On the previous 17, 18, 19 ends before that 20th end, what got you there? And now you're going to switch that?
Right.
You're not qualified to do that.
Nope.
Not good enough. You're not there yet. Nope. You're not there yet. You literally need to break it down to like the three simplest things you can possibly think of and do those well. and let the arrows fall where they will, and they'll usually fall pretty good for you. But having that competitive maturity just to stick to the program, because, I mean, in the end, that's all that matters. But in the end, though, you know, say if you win a big tournament, nobody's going to come up to you and say, wow, you know, great dedication to, you know, in commitment to your execution, your pre-shot routine and everything. You'll be like, wow, dude, you won.
Yeah,
it's exactly. Awesome. You won. You shot a 10. You won. You're like, no, the 10 was a side effect.
Right, right.
You know, so it's the boring stuff, but that is the stuff that's the most rewarding. When you're standing there and you have one arrow to go, or it's a defining moment in a tournament, a qualification, or a shoot-off, or whatever it is, and you go with everything that you've trained for, and you trust it, and your heart's beating out of your chest, your hands are sweaty, you know, you feel like the bow's shaking, and you stick to that, and you beat all those odds in that moment, those are the moments that mean more than a medal or a big check. But, you know, younger competitors, less seasoned athletes,
right?
They don't see that.
If I'm in a tournament and you win it, I'm going to come up and say, Dave, great commitment to your pre-shot execution.
Absolutely.
I'm not going to say congrats to win. That's what I'm going to say.
No. You know what? And we'll be the only, you know what? There might only be 20 people in that room that actually understand what you said. Because they're going to be
great.
Like, you know, he's right. Everybody else is going to be like, that was a really dick thing to say. He just won a big tournament.
Yeah, right.
You know, but like I said, you know, at 43 years old, and I've been competing full time for 25 years, I've seen enough of the real world where little stuff ain't going to bother me.
Right, right. So you said when you joined PSE that your commitment was going to be to indoor. If I think of Dave's cousins, I think field archery is the first thing I think of.
Yeah, field archery and outdoors, yeah.
Is that, are you not going to do as much of that, or does it just mean you're putting more emphasis on indoor?
Well, interesting now, with what we've got going on globally, I'm going to have to completely pivot. You have to pivot to stay active and stay relevant and to still be a benefit to yourself and to your partners. So now, I mean, obviously indoors is kaput. You know, we've got this virtual stuff, which really, it's not for us. It's for everybody else. It's for everybody watching, you know. That's cool. That's great. But it's going to have to be some outdoor stuff, because it seems that's about the only place we can gather in, you know, a decent number of people and have a competition. You know, like Gator Cup. Yeah, we had some regulations and some policies and stuff, but, you know, the 3Ds, we can still draw a crowd. And, you know, most of those are held in places where the governing – the people in governance have a little bit different outlook and
yep.
stuff. So we're going to have to pivot. And right now it's looking like the next competition to even go to would be an ASA, the earliest. If not, it's USA Archery stuff, and that's not till mid-April. You know, between now and mid-April, that's a long time. I want to go compete, you know. So
we're going to see you at Foley?
Yeah,
I think
that's what's going to happen. I'm still talking to it with my partners right now, but that's probably what we're going to do, you know, just because I want to be out there. I want to be in it. I want to be competing, and that's the only game in town right now, and truly grateful to have it. So,
yeah. So for you, what will you have to do? I mean, the ASA targets have their own thing.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of going back to, I mean, I shot at low 12s forever. I shot all the ASAs, IBOs, and even Cabela's when they had a tour. So, I mean, a lot of people don't know, I cut my teeth on shooting rubber deer.
I did not.
A long time ago. Oh,
gotcha.
Yeah, a long time ago. You know, I shot all those ASAs and stuff from about 1992 up to about 2000. You know, my first national level tournament I won was an ASA. And a Cabela's when they had the North American Bow Hunters Tour, NABHM. You know, so it's kind of shooting at a low 12 is just kind of muscle memory. It just, my sight picture just pulls down there. It's just, you know, it's just a good game.
Right. So that's not, we often hear archers say, oh, I got to learn where to shoot on this thing. That's not a problem for you. You know where to shoot.
Correct.
On these targets. So
can we hit them? Well, I don't know. You know, I mean, that's still the toss. That's yet to be determined. You know, that's the toss of the coin. You know.
And now will you shoot known pro? Is that what?
Yeah, I'll shoot known pro. I've got no desire to judge yardage. I gave judging yardage up a long time ago. No thanks. You know, one of the biggest issues is being up here in the Northeast. You know, that first tournament is in 7 weeks. 8 weeks, I guess, or 2 months. I guess you can call it 2 months. I've got snow and cold, and it's only going to get worse. I got nowhere to practice. I got no 3D targets to shoot at, which really doesn't bother me any. But just being able to get outside and get a sight mark or work on a setup, dude, it's cold. Like, that's right now, it's a warm day today. It's 32 degrees.
And plenty of snow.
Plenty of snow.
That's a lot different than looking down Pine Tree Lane in Foley, Alabama.
It's no planted pines out there in a cutting or palmettos or anything. So I've gotten creative in the past and stuff and shot from, you know, inside the house or inside my shop or the garage where it's heated to the outside, etc. And it's okay, but it's never the same. So what was nice a few years ago, another partner I was involved with, a really large indoor space, and I was able to travel out to Michigan and utilize that when I would. So I'd fly out and would use, you know, a couple of days to capture some media stuff, do some videos, do some promo stuff, meet with engineers, things like that. And then I'd get the weekend to play in a huge building. So, you know, so there's still some opportunities to do some stuff like that with the current partners I'm involved with, but it takes putting in your time and effort.
Yeah. Gotcha. You know, so. Well, I think the next Indoor World Series, I think it's in January. I can't
correct
remember when it is.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so, like mid-January or something like that. They sent an email came out this morning. I saw it. Some talk about registration cuts off on the 10th or something. I don't know. So,
you'll still be playing the indoor game until then.
Yeah. I shoot some indoor and stuff. Yeah. Matter of fact, I was just, before your call, I was just down in the shop getting the heat turned on, the lights and stuff, and go downstairs and shoot some arrows today and just kind of tinker, just kind of mess around. I mess around with that citation, some larger aluminums for outdoors, just try to stay busy and stay on top of it. So.
You said in a regular year, of course, January is super busy. You'd probably be shooting 250, 300 hours a day. What does it look like now with not as much competition?
Not as much shooting.
Yeah.
Enough to stay proficient, but you know, the reason why I've been doing this so long, I still like to shoot my bow, you know, and it's not so much the shooting in, it's not about the scores. It's not about working on a setup. It's just being in that moment and besting yourself, you know, like, can you really totally focus for the next 12 to 15 seconds and do what you've done a million times? Can you do that?
Okay, nope.
Cool. That was fun. You know, nope.
I was answering for myself there. Sorry.
Oh, yeah. Well, most people were like, yeah, no, I ain't got this. But, you know, that's just it. It's just staying proficient. And I mean, I still like to shoot my bow. It's fun to put up a clean target and shoot a real nice target, you know?
Yeah. So you'll still be playing with the same equipment. Will you be simultaneously setting up a 3D rig, or do you wait until?
No, I've kind of got, you know, I'll say just on paper, I got a setup thrown together, played with that citation a little bit, because I know it'll hold well, and it shot damn good in Florida at Gator Cup with my Pro Tours. My quest to find a slightly larger diameter shaft to shoot out of it still goes on. I think I've got something, but until I can get outside at 50 yards or so on a good day and see what it'll group like with that shaft, I really don't know. I won a lot of those ASAs shooting known pro with X10s, Pro Tours, Nanos.
Oh, okay.
You know, so I'm not afraid to go down there with a smaller shaft. I've always been a proponent of, I mean, the longest distance you shoot there is approximately 50 yards. You know, and if you've got a setup where you can take a dozen field arrows and you can put 8 or 10 of them in that 12 ring size spot at 50, why wouldn't you shoot them? When you can take, you know, and I've seen it, I'll take a larger diameter arrow and stand there at 50 yards and shoot 6 arrows and shoot a group that's the size of a tennis ball when you're shooting at something the size of a golf ball, you know, and you're like, wow, okay, so my groups on a good day are twice the size of my intended target. What happens on a bad shot? So I always try to gravitate to what misses by less when you make a bad shot.
Did you say put 8 or 10 in that lower 12
at 50 yards? Yeah, I mean, think about it. I mean, it's the same size roughly as the X ring on an 80 centimeter target face, and we shoot that at 55 yards, 50 meters.
That's true.
And 6X ins happen all the time.
Okay. I never thought of it that way.
Well, it's the same size. It's just all looking at perspective. Yes, you might not be able to see it, but, you know, target size relevant.
Right, right.
Not a big deal to stand there at 50 yards and, you know, shoot a wad of arrows the size of a golf ball. I mean, it happens every day.
Do you think you'll be doing some field shoots this year?
I don't know what our opportunities are going to be like. Currently, right now, there's no field tour in Europe going on. Our ability to travel over there, there's some hoops you got to jump through to get there. You can still do it, but there's not a lot of opportunity going on. We don't know what's going to happen with Reading yet. At least I don't. I'm not on the inside. I don't know yet. We're going to have that NFA Outdoor Nationals. I don't know. We're going back to Yankton. We're going to try to do something in Washington. You know, who knows? We don't really know. So
you'll
just kind of try to focus on what's in front of me.
You will do the USATs that they're having?
Yeah, I'm kind of leaning towards that. I looked at the schedule the other week and compared and contrast. And like the first couple, 3 ASAs, there's no conflict. And then as the USAT events get rolling, there's a couple of conflicts. So it might be like a bit of a hybrid season. We'll go shoot some ASAs, see how that's going. No, it's April. It's target season now. Transition over to some USATs. Just to stay active.
The big question, does any of that conflict with any fishing tournaments?
Every single bit of it. Every single bit of it. That was another reason that was an unintended benefit of focusing primarily on indoors. Because it was, November through March.
No fishing.
Yeah,
not tournaments anyway.
You know, gotcha. So that was nice. So it'll just kind of be a wait and see for what's really going to happen with the schedule and if more things get canceled or regulations open up or get more strict. You know, I don't really know, but that's kind of my intended plan now is to skip back out there, shoot some tournaments, be active. We can go shoot some ASAs. I'm going to pick up some USATs. You know, just give it a go. If I had to pick, you know, one format over the other where I knew or I felt more comfortable I could go in and make podiums, it'd be USATs hands down. I mean, with ASAs, there's an unknown factor that you have to practice. I ain't got targets. I ain't going to invest in targets, you know, and still, I mean, you're shooting at something you can't see, you know, in lighting conditions that are always, you know, there's a little bit more what if factor involved in
that. Yep. A black panther in a dark tunnel.
Yeah. Yeah. Or a little javelina, a turkey, something like that, you know? So, you know, USATs, it's here it is. It's 55 yards, a big yellow thing. You got 4 minutes, go.
You can always see it.
Yeah. You can always see it. Even at my age, you can still see it.
So I did want to talk about your fishing a little bit because that interests me. What circuit do you fish? Is it just up
right
in
now,
the Northeast or?
Yeah, I just fish in the Northeast right now. I fish, I'm in a couple different clubs. I have fished my state fish off, which in certain organizations, there's two major organizations for us up here. One is BASS. Everybody knows Bassmasters, all that stuff. The other one's TBF, Tournament Bass Fishing. And that's the one that's affiliated with FLW, Major League Fishing. So there's kind of like, you know, it's like ASA and USA Archery. You got kind of two different groups, you know, kind of doing similar thing, but doing their own thing. Now, I've made my state team in both organizations multiple times, been to the regionals multiple times, which is all over from basically from New York all the way up to Maine. And to make it to the national championship, you got to finish. You got to finish in the top of your state at the regionals. And I have been second numerous times.
Oh, you got to be number one.
You got to be number one from your state.
Gotcha.
Regional, yeah. Yeah, because like only 8 people from the regional get to go to the national championship. So basically one from each state plus a co-angler. Well, I'm a boater, not a co-angler. So I've been a hair's breadth from going to the national championship a handful of times.
Really?
Because here's the thing. You make your state team, you go to the regionals, you make the nationals, you go to the nationals. One person from each region gets to go to, there's another tournament after that, and then one person gets to go to the Bassmaster Classic.
Uh-huh.
So me and 300,000 other people think we're going to the Classic.
Yeah.
It's like Vegas. You got 3,800 people in that building. Only one person's going to win it.
Yeah.
But we all think we're going to win it.
So up there in Maine, are you pretty much... I would think it's pretty much smallmouth, correct?
You would be wrong.
I would be wrong. Okay.
You would be wrong. Maine, I like to tell people, you'll come for the smallmouth, but you'll stay for the largemouth.
Really?
We've got them. You see, the thing is, we've got a very diverse arrangement of different kinds of lakes. We've got deep, natural, clear glacier lakes chock full of rocks and sand. We've got shallow, weedy lakes, you know, algae bloom lakes, standing timber lakes. We've got river impoundments. We've got man-made reservoirs. We've got water that thermally stratifies. That means it's the same temperature from top to bottom. We've got water that will invert as the seasons change, where the top portion of the water will get cool. It'll fall to the bottom. The warmer water will come up, called inversion or turnover. We've got everything. So I think that gives us, the benefit of having a diverse fishery. And also, too, you got to think about it. In Maine, I think last year I got out, mid-March was the first day I got out, and I legit could still be fishing right now. As long as you put the plow on the truck and plow the ramp out, we got a couple lakes that aren't froze yet. So, I mean, literally, you're fishing for 8 to 9 months. And where we are this far in the Northeast, you have a limited number of people that are really doing it. You know, everybody's still chasing trout and salmon and stuff. And so our fish have a limited time window to do everything a fish normally does. Pre-spawn, spawn, post-spawn, summer feed up, all that stuff, fall feed up. They're doing it in a short amount of time. So they're usually always active. And you got less people out there chasing them. So they're not making the fish smart. You know, so you got a really great opportunity if you want to enjoy fishing. I would say our fishing is just as good as anywhere else in the country, but we got less people doing it, and the fish got less time to do what they do.
Wow. That sounds like paradise. That sounds like exactly the opposite of Pennsylvania.
Pennsylvania, I know from experience, is very stingy when you get towards the interior for any kind of recreational freshwater fishing. Until you get up to the lake, it's really tough for sure. But in Maine, most people, they catch their bigger fish in the spring when they come off on beds, or they catch their bigger fish in the fall when they're feeding up. I tend to catch my bigger bags and my biggest fish dead of summer.
Dead of summer.
And that kind of speaks to the type of fishing I'm doing. I'm primarily an offshore structure guy.
Oh, okay.
I'm looking for the spot on the spot. You know, a lot of guys, you're going down the bank or you're fishing a weed line. Look over your shoulder. I'm the guy out there in the middle of the lake looking down at all his screens on the front of the boat. And you're going, what is that guy fishing out
yeah,
there?
Right.
Like, I don't know. That guy's crazy. And I'll be the one that comes in with 24 pounds.
With the big bass. Yeah.
Yeah.
So. Cool.
Well, it's just a game, you know. It's just fun. It's just something that, it's still something that's competitive, which is great, but it's something that doesn't have any consequences. So it's given me the freedom to express myself differently in competitive situations and see how it works, which has definitely benefited what I do for a living, 100%.
Let's talk about that for a minute. Yeah, how does that help your archery game?
It's the freedom to be unafraid of failure. You know, like I said, in a fishing scenario, if it's in this lake, this time of year, we always do this. Everybody does this. This is the predominant pattern. And everybody's doing the same thing. You know, these fish are tired of seeing that. Go do something completely different. So in a competitive moment, like I talked about that shot vocabulary, to bring this full circle again, you know, everybody preaches in archery, do it consistently. Do it consistently. Well, now you're consistently stuck. So how about making a change here? I can't make a change. You need to practice that. Well, make that change now on the fly, because what you're doing ain't working. Or what you're doing is working, but you can see it eroding. So make a change to get in front of this and take that chance. And sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But in the past, I would have just steered the course. And sometimes it's worked brilliantly. Other times it hasn't worked so good. But making that change and being unafraid to do it puts you out in front of the moment competitively. Now you are acting, not reacting.
Reacting, right. Uh-huh. Good stuff.
If you read further into that acting and not reacting in any tactical situation, that is what you're trained to do. You are trained to act, not react.
Or was there something that we didn't talk about that you wanted to talk about?
No, I can't really come up with anything, honestly. You know, we covered a lot of stuff. The bottom line is just, you know, that pivoting, you know, what I'm doing with my schedule and stuff. We've put together a series of seminars. I'll be traveling the last week of January and the first 2 weeks of February, conducting some seminars, and probably take another few weeks off. And just before or right around USAT season getting kicked off, I'll look to do another tour of those. But just to be active and to share information, share my experiences, just to help people enjoy the sport some more. You know, and I think that's something a lot more pros should do, because if you're not out there trying to share your knowledge and we don't have competitions, how are you being an asset right now? How are you helping people perpetuate the passion for the sport? So,
how can people find out where these things are?
Well, they'll typically pop up, and you can follow them all on the socials and stuff like that. And I'll usually work with shops and ranges in someone's area. You know, right now I've got one coming up in Oklahoma City, and then I'll be in La Grande, Oregon, and then I'll be out west near Portland, Oregon. But that's kind of how it works. You can, if you just follow my socials, The Real Dave Cousins, Facebook, athlete page, you'll be kept up to date on that stuff. And if somebody wants to reach out to me, they got a club or a shop that is interested about it, have them contact me, and I'll get them all the info.
Perfect. That does raise the question. I'm glad you mentioned that. I noticed that your Facebook handle is The Real Dave Cousins. Is there another one out there? Is that why you added that, or where did that come from?
I was in the early stages of all this social media stuff. We make mistakes sometimes, and then when you get the brand established, you can't go back and change it. But no, there's an English folk singer. His name is Dave Cousins. Cousins and the Strawberries. And the only reason I know this is because I had a page, and I don't know. They sent me a letter.
Okay.
They wanted their domain. No, this one I had a website. I had a website with before the social. I had a website, and it was just DaveCousins.com. Well, they sent me a letter. They wanted me to cease and desist and terminate the use of DaveCousins.com. I'm like, why?
That's my name.
That's my name. And they're like, well, that's this guy's name too, and he's a recording artist, and blah blah blah. I says, okay, well, for X number of dollars, you can have it. Never heard back from him. So I guess Dave Cousins and his folk singing, he just ain't got the cheddar to buy a domain. So then I went over to the, you know, social when Facebook got going. I was like, well, we're just going to squash this now. We'll go with The Real Dave Cousins.
I like it.
Yeah. But if somebody wants to buy it, let me know.
It's for sale.
Yeah.
All right, folks, that is another episode of the Competition Archery Media Podcast. Dave Cousins, we certainly appreciate your time today.
No, thank you very much, PJ. It's a pleasure.
Folks, the Competition Archery Media Podcast, you can find that on all the platforms where you find your favorite podcasts. Don't forget to go back through the library. We've got lots of great episodes there for you to listen to. Thanks for joining us.